Welcome, everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through space and time, lords. Episode 5, The Girl Who Died. Welcome to the Lonely TARDIS, your Doctor Who podcast, the only Doctor Who podcast you will ever need. I'm Dolly Domofsky, one of your lovely hosts. Also joining me is Steven Strum.
Hi there.
Marcus Beer.
Wiggity wiggity whack.
And lo and behold, the one, the only, Sean Norton.
Yeah. Let's get swifty this week, huh?
Oh.
I'm back. What up?
It's Arthur Sean Zarelli joining us for the podcast this week.
I don't understand that reference.
Welcome back, Sean. You've missed quite a bit over the last couple weeks. You've missed Marcus Beer actually enjoying more than one Doctor Who episode in a season.
I heard last week. I caught up today, and it was refreshing.
Definitely.
Welcome back to the club, Marcus. I'm glad you like Doctor Who again.
Well, I mean, let's face it. It was always going to be, you know, it couldn't have been much worse than last year.
I don't know. I remember some ultimate bottom of the barrel stuff, but I do not.
Well, we do have
the impression, you know, that you used to open the show last week. By the way, Mr. Marcus,
sorry,
I do not sound like that. I may say those things. I do not sound like that. You made me sound like a sissy little girl, and I'm not a fan. I'm going to file a formal complaint with Dolly and the board here.
And I think the amount of fucks they give amounts to zero.
No comments allowed.
You're on vacation. Look at me, I'm on vacation. I'm on vacation with Stephen Moffat's underpants in my head.
I did see that photo on Twitter, Sean, of you holding Stephen Moffat's underpants.
great banter there.
Mm-hmm. Nice banter there. We're just glad to have you back, Sean. That's all that matters. We did miss you. There was a lot that happened. You know, let's just do this. Before we dive into all this week's fun, which on tap this week for our faithful listeners and new listeners, we're going to talk, obviously, about The Girl Who Died, the latest episode of Doctor Who, and I'm going to touch base a little bit on the new Big Finish series, Doom Coalition 1, Volume 1. So I'll talk to that a little bit. But before we do this, I want to hear Sean's thoughts on the last episode, or the previous episode of Doctor Who.
Before the Flood, right?
Before the Flood, yes.
It was good. I thought it was... I thought it was a really good follow-up to the first part. I really agreed with a lot of yours, Marcus's sentiments on the last episode. Sorry I missed those in person. But, I really enjoyed it. I think it wrapped it up as good as it could. I think it had a really good classic Who feel to it. And I won't burn too much time today talking about that because you guys, I thought, did a great job.
Okay.
Maybe not so much Stephen and his negativity, but I thought you guys did a great job last episode really going into why it was so strong. So. I'm in agreement with that. I would have probably given it a 4.5 for both, for that and for both. So I enjoyed it a lot. I think the show is really on a roll, and I'm really happy with how the season's playing out so far.
That was the second two-part episode, and the first of the third two-part episodes. I think there's four two-parters in all this season, or five two-parters in all, with a couple other extra little episodes splattered throughout. We're zooming through this season. It actually feels like we're going a lot faster through Doctor Who this year because it is a lot of two-part episodes.
Are we halfway through officially?
No, I think there's 12 episodes this year.
Okay. Right?
12 episodes and then the Christmas special or whatever. Yeah. They kind of don't count that as an episode every year, and I don't know why, because it's always on the DVDs together, so who cares?
Yep. Well, let's talk a little bit about Big Finish, the Doom Coalition. So we briefly brought it up a couple weeks ago and again last week, and now we're full throttle into listening to the Doom Coalition, the Big Finish episode. So what Big Finish does with their audio is that they do these audio plays, audiobooks essentially, of more than audiobooks. They are audio plays, radio plays, I'm going to keep coming up with words right now because I don't have anything else. No, they do these. Yeah, there you go. So they put together these programs, and they're an hour long. And essentially, there are these volumes of these hour long programs. So the Doom Coalition, or Doom Coalition Volume 1, is four separate little Doctor Who stories. They're an hour apiece. They're essentially the length of an episode of Doctor Who, and they're produced really well. So there's sound effects. They hire the actual actors, and all of the Big Finish stuff. And just the quality that Big Finish puts in is great. I mean, their sound effects. They'll have like radio effects. There's the sonic screwdriver is prevalent. So I've dove into the first story, the first chapter or episode of the Doom Coalition 1, which, by the way, Doom Coalition is all about the Eighth Doctor, Mr. McGann, who I think we all kind of fell in love with after the sort of prequel to the 50th anniversary special. And that came out of nowhere. So it was great to get back into the Eighth Doctor. And this episode that I've listened to, the first one, is called The Eleven, and it stars... So to kind of set the picture, all this stuff takes place with the Eighth Doctor, which means it all happens before the Time War, right? And so Gallifrey is still around. In fact, this first episode takes place on Gallifrey in the Capitol. And there's other Time Lords that they interact with, the Doctor and his companion Liv. Liv is her name. And they actually meet what may be the most dangerous Time Lord criminal, known as the Eleven. And it's a really cool idea for a villain, in that the Eleven is essentially a Time Lord who's gone through 10 regenerations, which means there's 11 Time Lords altogether. But they're all in his head. He's kept the personalities of each one of his incarnations in his head, and they fight back and forth for kind of ownership of the body and decision making, and to hear him throughout this story argue with himself and make plans, and there's a couple that are like good angel, bad angel. It's really well done. It's actually this really cool character that I'd love to see make his way into further Doctor Who. It's just a novel idea of this schizophrenic Time Lord.
That has happened before, hasn't it? Not necessarily with characters, but right. Places have been mentioned in audiobooks that have been then brought to, or audio plays that have been brought to the show.
Yeah. And the other great part is that this episode directly references a lot of the Doctor Who Gallifreyan lore. Like it references episodes and so on that Doctor Who was in, so, or that came straight from the show. So things like Romana is referenced in this, and there's the jail, there's the academy, there's all kinds of stuff, there's name drops all throughout. So it's fantastic for fans of classic Doctor Who, like the pre ninth Doctor, I guess you could say, pre-modern Who. So it's really good. I've really enjoyed this first episode. Again, it's acted well, and McGann is just fantastic as the Eighth Doctor, Yeah, I highly recommend so far. I'm only one in, and there's four episodes, but I highly recommend it so far. The really cool thing is at the end, so it's, I think it's like over 5 hours long total. So four of the hours are the individual stories, and they all kind of work together. And then the fifth hour, the separate thing, is a behind the scenes. Apparently they go into, I haven't listened to it yet, but they go into the making of the four episodes, and they interview the cast and talk about the planning. So that should be pretty interesting of what goes into the audio plays. So we'll have more on that. I'm looking to get them all finished probably this week, and I might do a quick write-up with my initial thoughts, and I'll talk more next week. But, yeah.
I really wish I could talk to you more about that. Like, I really, really want to listen to it.
If you get time this week, Stephen and guys, definitely dive into it, because I'd love to have a real discussion about this.
I mean, absolutely. Like, I don't know if I talked about this a ton, but I love audio play type stuff. I got into it like real deep. Like when I was a kid, I had a big collection of like The Shadow on DVD or on DVD on CD that I used to listen to basically every night before going to bed and everything like that. And then later on, got way more into stuff in college and whatnot. Sure. And I've been really wanting to listen to Big Finish's stuff for a little while. And what sounds interesting about this is that it sounds like, I mean, because it's the Eighth Doctor, because the Time Lords are still around and everything like that, we can have a Doctor story that is very different than what we have now. We can have like a classic Doctor Who story without any of the baggage, and that sounds appealing. Not to say that I don't want more new Doctor Who pushing forward and all that stuff, but I like to also know that we can have some kind of classic stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good. I mean, I think this is going to be what's tiding us over in between, you know, once this season's done and whatever happens next year, and I'm sure we'll get into that as well. But yeah, I think that this could be a great way to do it. And again, what's awesome to me is that it goes through, you know, huge eras of Doctor Who, through Torchwood, and it uses the original actors in a lot of these cases. I mean, there's Colin Baker is in a bunch of these, and they've been doing a lot of the Doctor, you know, they've been doing a lot of these things. It's fantastic. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's really worth checking out. So, with that said, let's jump into the TV episode this week, The Girl Who Died. So this is season 9, episode 5 of Doctor Who, the first of another two-parter. This is a very hyped episode way before the season started because of Maisie Williams, who is in this and the following episode, The Woman Who Lived. She is, of course, Arya Stark on the Game of Thrones TV show. She's a fantastic young actress on that show, really popular. So bringing her into this just seemed like a fantastic fit. And she's not the first Doctor Who not the first Game of Thrones mainstay to appear in Doctor Who. Obviously, we've had folks from like Davos, the actor who played Davos, I forget his name, and others have been in this and have been in Doctor Who. So it's great. And of course, Mark Gatiss, who is a writer on Doctor Who, was also in Game of Thrones.
Oh, was in Game? Okay, I thought you were just going to say that this was an episode by him, and I don't think it was.
He also appeared in one of the early David Tennant, Martha Jones episodes. Mark Gatiss, he was the scientist, the Lazarus Project.
That's right.
So this episode, The Girl Who Died, was written by Jamie Matheson and kind of co-written by Stephen Moffat, directed by Ed Bazalgette. And hopefully I did not butcher the name.
Do we remember off the top of our heads who Matheson has done, which episodes Matheson has done in the past? Because I know that name.
Well, I'm just clicking, and I see here that, Mummy on the Orient Express and Flatline. And so two of our more favorite our two favorite episodes from last season.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, there's a lot of hype for this one. Any of The Girl Who Died, I don't believe he's doing the second parter, which is The Woman Who Lived. But
just Moffat?
It may just be Moffat. But, so this episode. So I'll do the super quick recap. The Doctor and Clara arrive in, ancient, I don't want to say ancient, but in the land of Vikings, And are instantly greeted by a giant Thor or a giant Odin head, who obviously we know there's no giant heads in Doctor Who, just aliens doing something. And
there have been giant alien heads before.
Yes, like, correct. But they are aliens. They're not like deities. And so this guy's this Odin character, who's ever impersonating Odin, is trying to take over the Earth in a usual Doctor Who way, and is essentially taking the testosterone from all the greatest warriors and building his own body up and making himself more powerful that way. And there's a battle scene with a lot of the more wit and science rather than actual fighting. And that's essentially how it ends. It ends with Maisie Williams dying, her character dying. And her name was a Shielder. I think her name was a Shielder.
Something along those lines, yeah.
She dies, and then the Doctor brings her back to life and essentially makes her immortal using the kind of nanotechnology chip from the other beasts, the Mire, that were in the episode. And that's it. So let's dive right into it. And I want to get the very first thing I want to talk about, plot aside, character aside, is Maisie Williams. I mean, I think that was, to me, the big selling point of this episode. Oh, my God, we have the actress that's playing Arya Stark is going to be in Doctor Who. And my opinion right away was I was not quite sold on her as this kind of young wannabe fighter. I mean, she almost played a lot of – there's a little bit of Arya in her in this episode, I think, because she didn't want to be – you know, she wanted to be the savior, wanted to kind of do things her own way. But it just didn't quite click with the whole idea of Viking culture. At least, you know, I've been watching the Vikings TV show lately, and it's phenomenal. And so there's been, like, these conflicting stories about what Vikings actually were and through legend and through reality. And so, I don't know, I just didn't quite feel for her. Even when she dies at the end, I was like, okay, well, I know she's coming back to life because they always do. But I don't know. I just wasn't quite feeling her as a shielder. I mean, what are your guys' thoughts? Did she do a good job? Do you think that there was too much hype in having her on the show?
I'm gonna let everybody else go first.
All right.
So we established earlier on that I'm gonna have thoughts on this episode. So I want to let everybody else get their piece said before I take over the narrative or anything like that. I don't want to take away from everybody's ability to speak right now.
I mean, I don't have too much to say, so I'll go first. I thought she was fine. I wasn't blown away. Mm-hmm. But I thought for the role she was cast in, at least so far, I thought she did a fine job with that. Okay. Maybe I didn't really tune into too much of the hype. I really, outside of like, oh, she was crossing over into the show and she's going to play a character, I really didn't subscribe to too much of, I guess, fandom's hype on all this. But I thought she was fine. I was actually surprised. I thought her role was a little more constrained, a little more limited than I expected.
Yeah,
at least until the end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought she was fine. I thought it was an inoffensive part. I don't know maybe what other people were expecting, or maybe they expected her to dominate the show or go toe-to-toe with Capaldi and the Doctor, which, I mean, could still happen next week. You never know. But for what this was, yeah, I didn't have a problem with it, but I wasn't, you know, it was okay.
What about you, Marcus? What did you think about her character, her role, her fulfilling the hype? Or was there hype? Did you even believe in any of the hype? Was there any hype for you in her role in this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I got it monumentally wrong where I was, putting the vibes out there that I thought it would be the Doctor's daughter, mm-hmm. and it wasn't. But I got to say, I mean, I'm not going to single Maisie Williams out because it's not her fault she was on such a shitty episode. It was boring. It mm-hmm. really was. It felt like what should have been a 15-minute webisode padded out to 45 minutes so they could justify doing a second part next week. It was just so plodding and pondering and, you know, in effect, you know, these soldiers who beamed down the planet, liquidized the other guys, so that somebody can, you know, drink some, their distilled adrenaline.
Like Viking juice.
Yeah, it was just so wanky. I mean, you know, that, I was like, oh, the whole thing then is the premise is to set up episode 2, where, yes, she's immortal through time. And guess what? From what we see in the trailer, she still looks like she's 4 years old. So, I mean, what, is she stuck in a child's body for the rest of her life? The rest of immortality? I mean, the first 4 episodes have been good, you know. This one was just self-indulgent. Mm-hmm. So how do we take a 1-hour episode and split it into 2? And I think the writer probably had this is a tight 1-hour episode, and then Moffat got his fingers in it. And, you know, oh, Maisie Williams, we have to pad her out to 2 weeks. We've got her cast. Blow. How do we pad this out? Because let's face it, I mean, she basically was Arya Stark.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you know, so much for the storyteller, the artist, the, you know, the gentle soul. I am a Viking and I challenge you to war. Oh, yeah, good job, 12-year-old. You just opened your mouth just as these guys were about to leave. I mean, it was some seriously bad writing, bad characterization. Nobody really gives a shit about the, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I don't give, didn't give a shit about her character. And the fact she died was like, oh, okay, great. And then he had to go make her immortal. I mean,
right,
what's
right.
the point? It's the first bum episode of the season. And yeah, and that's all I've got to say. I mean, I don't think I've got anything else to discuss. I was so bored by this episode. I really was.
Well, let's let Steven talk now. That he's been kind of biting his tongue a little bit about this whole thing and her and everybody else. So, Steven, why don't you just open up, buddy? Just tell us.
Well, no, I mean, limiting myself to just like to the topic at hand, the Maisie Williams stuff. I think I kind of come somewhere down the middle between Sean and Marcus, which is that I did think she was inoffensive, but I also do feel like they kind of. You know, it was whatever, you know, it was mm-hmm. like, I'm not a big sucker for guest stars. Like, I'm not really big sure. into that idea. Like, Doctor Who loves its guest stars. Like, you know, we've had Simon Pegg, we've had the, like you said, Davos Seaworth and all that stuff. We've had all these people throughout even the last couple of years. And it just never really, like, okay, like, it's okay, I guess. Like, half these people I don't even know anyway. And, like, even, like, regardless of whether they're, like, good on another show, like, I went to, like, you know, Doctor Who is very different from a lot of different things. Like, it can go one way or the other. So I like to kind of try and judge people based on, like, their merits in the episode itself. And I think, like, you know, again, I come somewhere between the two of them. I think that Maisie Williams was just, like, she could have been played by any no-name actress in this thing. As long, you know, somebody with some chops or whatever to, like, add a little bit of pathos to the character or whatever. I'm not trying to discount Maisie Williams', like, acting ability or anything like that. I'm just saying that for what they wrote for her, like, a guest star did not seem entirely necessary, but I also wasn't like offended by it in any way. Mm-hmm. That said, like I think I come, you know, kind of halfway down the middle in the like in that I think Marcus makes a good point in that this does feel like a single episode that was yes. padded out into two-parter. Yep. Which at first I thought was going to be something very different. Then I saw the preview for next week with like cutting into the Robin Hood type or like more like the Scarlet Pumpernel Pumpernickel mm-hmm.
I think the Scarlet Pumpernel.
The Scarlet Pumpernel is that what we're calling it now?
No, I mean the Scarlet Pumpernickel is a really great type of bread and this you know.
Okay, yep, the Scarlet Pumpernickel. Okay. The Scarlet Beaver. Yeah, I mean, next week that'll be her name, I'm sure. That whole thing that she's got going on, like, that seemed like a completely different story that they wanted to, like, that they have maybe, like, connected, made some kind of weird connection between two different story plots that were kicking around that were maybe never going to be huge stories by themselves, but, like, they thought, like, well, we've got Maisie Williams, we can make some kind of connection here, and we can make these two stories that maybe wouldn't, like, we wouldn't necessarily think were worth putting on Doctor Who in the current format that we have, and make them connect them together and try to make something a little bit greater than the sum of their parts. And that was kind of my assumption there. Also, the fact that this episode was I was actually kind of happy with the fact that this was kind of a self-contained episode that didn't really need to, like, you know, it has some interconnected tissue and stuff like that by the end, but, like, I thought that it was fine to have a, like, mm-hmm. this, like, in this season that is going to be mostly two-parters. I thought it was fine to have, like, a story that felt self-contained, and, like, I felt like it had a beginning, middle, and end, and there's connective tissue that goes into something else completely different, but it doesn't mean that this episode has to necessarily be shorthanded, like I kind of felt like that first episode of the Under the Lake was. I thought that was, you know, I thought that episode kind of ended in such a way that they had a really strong idea to make that into a two-parter, but then it didn't feel like they necessarily had the story there to make enough for a two-parter. It was just right. But they had the connective tissue. Whereas this one, the connective tissue is a little bit weird, but the individual episode itself I thought was pretty okay. It was just old school kind of goofy, fun Doctor Who, you know, a bunch of people get murdered at the beginning and nobody bats an eye because that's Doctor Who now, whatever. I thought I liked a lot of parts about it. I liked the ending, especially not with necessarily the Maisie Williams getting resurrected thing, but I liked that we finally had a Doctor Who, and I kind of warned you guys I would be getting a little long-winded with this, but...
That's fine.
It's another thing that's, you know, very, we've rushed to this conclusion, obviously, with the, like, Doctor realizing what his true face, or what the true meaning of his face,
yep.
and the connection to the fires of Pompeii, and it's there to remind him that he's a good man. I thought that felt, like, thrown in as a part of their, like, well, we need connective tissue between these two episodes that are not really, were never really meant to be connected. So I thought it felt rushed, but I liked the revelation. Like, I liked the Doctor acknowledging... Hey, I am I'm the Doctor and I save people, that whole thing. And then I liked the immediate turnaround of like, okay, well, now that the emotional high of that moment is over, I'm sitting here and thinking that I've made a big mistake. I thought that was the most defined version of Peter Capaldi we've seen yet, that whole like last 5-10 minutes of the episode with him, like, you know, he is the Doctor, he remembers he's the Doctor, and like David Tennant's Doctor is like reaching to him from beyond the grave to remind him that he is the Doctor, and yet you still got this warring personality of Peter Capaldi's Doctor saying like, but, you know, do I also need to be practical? Like, did I make a mistake by acting like I used to? And, you know, seeing those two in contrast to each other in this episode, I think, like, finally gave some definition to what they're doing with Peter Capaldi. That stuff I liked. That is the stuff I liked. The stuff I didn't like, and this is the part that I said I was going to have a lot of thoughts about, was, like, just the general Viking stuff. Mm-hmm. Which is, I am very precious about Viking lore and Viking mythology and Viking history and stuff like that. It's, you know, my cultural heritage type thing, and I, you know, I keep eyes on it a lot, and I read about it a lot, and I follow it a lot and stuff like that, and I'm kind of proud of that whole stuff there. So I get kind of, especially in these days where, Dally, you mentioned yourself that there's a lot of Viking stuff on TV everywhere. It is fucking like there's Vikings on the History Channel. There's BBC has its show where it's British, but it's the British fighting the Vikings. There's that like Bastard Executioners kind of Viking-esque. There's
we have a Viking on the Lonely TARDIS named Stephen Strom.
Yeah, I mean I'm sitting over here wearing my beard and my war paint, and I have my you know buckler ready to attack and everything. But, no, so, like, I always hate to see, like, these weird, like, stereotypical representations of Vikings that are, like, incorrect and all these damn things like that. So I get really defensive about it. And so,
I agree. Totally. Yeah, I can see that.
The horned helmet goofy shit that never really existed. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got all these warriors and they're all a bunch of dudes that we're going to throw onto, you know, onto this place. And like, even literally talking about testosterone and all that and these steroids and stuff like that, when Viking, you know, shield maidens were a thing and like there were, you know, women warrior Vikings and all this stuff back then. And like, you know, depicting the Vikings as like this incredibly warlike race of people that, you know, it really bugs me at times when they, you know. One thing I did like, so like just to wrap things up, the one thing I did like about that is Doctor Who avoided a stereotype that it could have easily fallen into, which or is a cliche rather, that I really hate in science fiction, the idea of like, well, we've traveled back in time or we've noticed like these weird aliens or whatever, and these aliens are evil and they created a religion that was based entirely on fooling the savage, like, you know, the savage people and their dumb ideas about things. So all their gods are just fake and bullshit and made up and stuff like that. The Stargate of it all, like the dumb pagans fell for all this like god-like shit and like it was all made up, which this episode very nearly fell into. And then like the Doctor turned around and said, like, no, Odin has, like, been a thing to these people for a long time. This fake Odin is, like, a new occurrence. He didn't create the myth of Odin for them or stuff like that. And, like, the Doctor even acknowledges that, like, no, like, listen, you none of you believe that that's really Odin because the gods never actually interfere. And so, like, they sidestepped an issue that I was really worried that they would get into. Like, basically all the cultural stuff, all the stuff with the Vikings themselves, like, depicting these dumb, goofy idiots and with the big dumb horns and like the no acknowledgement of like real Viking stuff, that bothered me. The plot of the episode itself, I actually thought was pretty solid small episode. Sorry for talking so much.
No, I'm glad you let us know your thoughts. I do agree with you in some aspects there, and I think it was fine. The episode was fine. It was structurally there. It was just boring to me. I this is where I lean towards Marcus's thoughts. Nothing in the episode really got me excited and going. I mean, there's nothing super memorable. I mean, and the things that popped up, like the eels. Oh, eels, electric eels. Okay, eels. All right, great, whatever. I know the Doctor can speak, baby. So that was a thing, apparently. But there was a lot of like these things that popped up that, not only were they almost, there were some things that were stereotypical, like bad stereotyping of kind of Viking culture, but there were just inconsistencies in the plot and the story that would pop up. And like I said, I mean, I mentioned the eels, but there's all kinds of stuff. There's the magnets. Okay, let's make magnets out of nowhere. And how do these villagers know how to, you know about technology in the first place? And so there were what? Just, yeah, right? Well,
no, I mean, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, there's, I think one of them mentioned technology or says something about technology. And I
think you're maybe projecting there, but okay. Like, that wasn't one of necessarily the things that I noticed.
Maybe I am projecting, but it just seemed like they were too comfortable with a lot of the things that were just popping up out of nowhere. But
I mean, that's Doctor Who at a certain point. Like, it's just the people are like, why are the medieval people in the first episode of the season like accepting of, hey, the Doctor has a guitar? It's like, well, it's magic.
That's true. Okay. That is true. Yeah. But I don't know. I just overall, it didn't really get me all that. I don't know. I didn't get my juices flowing throughout. I didn't get my my Viking juices flowing. There were some neat parts, I gotta say. I felt it was interesting how they handled the Doctor's face, bringing back the fires of Pompeii. But I thought it was just too quick of an offhanded, an offhanded way of doing that. You know, I would have liked the whole big thing about the Doctor. Maybe this should have taken place last year at the very end of the season, because we've already heard like this is like the second or third time we've heard the Doctor say, I'm the Doctor and I save people or I help people. Okay, we've heard that a few times and he kind of worn out, you know.
He has been repeating that whole like, am I a good man? Am I not a good man? Things like we've been seeing that since like David Tennant era, and it's just like, no, I would have get it.
See, I would have loved a great bookend at the end of last season, because at the very beginning of the season it says, why did I choose this face? Why does this face seem familiar? And then he goes right into that, am I a good man? Am I a bad man? It would have been great at the end of last season for him to say, now I know why I chose that face. It's to remind myself that I am a good man. And then
they're dragging back that plot point. Yeah. Absolutely. I absolutely agree on there.
So I think this was too little too late almost.
It does feel thrown in. Like I like the revelation. I like what he actually said. It's just like, it felt like they needed a place to, they needed something to, to connect these two episodes that like were not necessarily like worthy of being a two-parter themselves,
right? Yep.
Or even like on spec for like the quality of Doctor Who that they are right now. They were, you know, maybe some older scripts or something like that, and they used it to connect those two because they needed something to fill the time between them.
So I totally agree, and I almost wonder now that if having these episodes back to back is a disservice to the episodes, because you could take the second Maisie Williams episode and put it later on in the season, like maybe right before the finale of the season, and have it kind of build up to him bumping into her again, because now it's not a full story. It is, it's two separate stories, right? It's not one story divided in half with the first episode building up to the revelation of the second episode. This is two separate individual stories with that Maisie Williams link that I thought would have been great now. And of course, I don't know what's going to happen next episode, but I would have almost liked to have some distance between the Maisie Williams episode, because now we know that she's been around for a long time and there's meat on her character.
It would give that character room to breathe and room to matter. Like Marcus said, like she died and then she came back to life, and like we don't have time to care about her necessarily, because this episode wasn't really even about her. She kind of like just came in and screwed a bunch of stuff up and then like felt bad about it, and then like. And then that was kind of her entire turnaround. Like I said, like I just think it's kind of a waste of, I mean, like I, well, it, it's a waste, but it's like also kind of, again, I just don't care. Cause like, I mean, you can put any actor in that situation, guest actor or not. Yep. And like, it's not, I'm not going to fall for it necessarily. Like,
But I did love the reversing the polarity of the neutron flow. So that was a nice little thrown in. I also love that the Sonic sunglasses were broken. Finally.
There was going on. I was wondering who was going to throw that in.
Well, aren't they back next week?
Damn it! You had to bring that up, Marcus. So, I mean, Stephen and I kind of went into our extended thoughts. Marcus mentioned while it was kind of boring.
I just want to like point out one last thing. It's like I recognize that like as far as like Viking culture goes and stuff like that, like I have it pretty damn good, like in terms of like inaccurate portrayals of like a culture and religion and stuff like that in ancestry and stuff like that. Like it is very typically, you know, like Vikings right now are like Thor is one of like the biggest, you know, franchises in the world and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and depicted positively and all this stuff. Whereas, like, you know, for hundreds of years, like Vodun and stuff like that has been portrayed as like evil and wrong and like all these other, you know, different things. And people have like all these different things. And I totally get that. And like, I know that my complaints are not necessarily as valid or as, you know, important as some other people's.
No, I definitely think they are.
I don't want to but I don't want to come across like I'm saying like mine is like, oh, everything's so bad for me. Like I just want to recognize that there's like, this is a running thing in science fiction that has been a problem for like many, many decades.
Yep, I agree.
You're a geek for Vikings. We get it. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. That's fine. It's always fascinating to me when historical accuracies bug some people, rub some people the wrong way. But
it's more like a heritage thing with me. Mm-hmm. Like my family is from, you know, even in Norway and stuff like that. Like looking back into my family stuff, this is kind of one of the only things that I'm that worked up about in terms of like history and stuff like that. I'm not like some history buff or anything like that. It's just I care about, you know, where my grandparents are from and stuff like that, you know.
Sure. I'm Irish, so I imagine if they ever portrayed the Irish as anything but drunken fools, I'd be pretty upset about it too.
Right.
Because they have to be drunken fools.
Hey, guys, were you born in Ireland or in Sweden or in Norway or anywhere like that? Or were you born in the U.S.?
I was born in the U.S., but I visit Eastern Europe often. So okay, I have an
hour. So let me get this straight. You're all born in the U.S.? Yeah, just simple yes or no.
Yes.
Sure.
Sean, Stephen?
I think so.
Yeah, born in the U.S.? You're fucking American of European descent, which is fine. You're not a Viking. You're not Irish. You know, you're of that descent, which is fantastic. You're not born in the country. You're American of that descent, which is fine. Great. There's nothing wrong with that. But come on. Historical inaccuracies abound in Doctor Who like crazy.
This is true. This is true.
I agree.
They really had black serving maids running around London in the 1600s, especially ones who were allowed to give a bunch of lip. I mean, let's face it, Doctor Who and historical inaccuracy go hand in hand, like Americans not being able to say that they're actually Americans. So I understand.
I'm not claiming that I'm not. I
get pissed off when they fuck stuff up with Wales. Absolutely, but let's just say what it is. It was a mediocre episode at best for some people. It was a boring waste of time for others, like myself. There was inaccuracies. Maisie Williams was playing Arya Stark. The whole thing about why the Doctor got Capaldi's face is the biggest bunch of horse goblin bollocks I've ever heard in my life. It was almost as if, oh, we've got to give them something for next year. Let's just say it all will be revealed. All will be revealed. Oh, let's throw in a fucking vignette of David Tennant from the Fires of Pompeii. I mean, really? So he doesn't forget? So, hang on. So does that mean from now on he's not going to forget and he's going to change the rules for everybody? No, it'll be forgotten in 2 episodes' time.
Yep.
This is what Moffat's done again. He's got his fingers in, and he's fucked with canon, and he's just dicked it around. So this is a bad episode, people, in so many different ways. They couldn't even keep the sonic screwdriver, sonic glasses broken. That's how bad it is. Why didn't the Doctor just get the TARDIS, land in the village, pull everybody in, and fuck off? I mean, seriously. It was a bad episode from whichever way you look at it. So let's all get beyond that, because honestly, I've listened to you. I mean, I love you guys. And listening to you talking about the episode is boring me rigid, because the episode is so boring. No matter what great things you have to say, they're being dragged down by the taint of Moffat's tinkering. So it's a shit episode. No stars. See how it goes next week and might bump it up.
He's like, adios, I'm going to go watch the Star Wars trailer now.
I've already got my tickets for opening night, 11 p.m. Thank fuck.
11 p.m. Why wait so long?
Yeah. because the first, well, no, opening as in the 17th, the day before it opens.
I know.
So yes, the first one's at 7, and I'm gonna see it. And who knows, I might be not pissed at Stephen Moffat by then.
Well, who knows what'll be fresh in your mind at that point.
I'll come out and demand a special episode of The Lonely TARDIS where we talk about J.J. Abrams and how he's fucked with my childhood.
Listen, were you born in the U.S. to appreciate Star Wars and what it meant to childhoods? No, you did not.
I was born in Wales, and I lined up for 2 hours with my mother to watch it at the Llanelli Entertainment Center when I was seven.
I think you may be the only – what year was that? That was 77, right?
Yeah.
That you were the only one that was born out of us four that
that's true.
Saw the original Star Wars. So that paints a wonderful picture of how old you actually are.
I'm 45.
Exactly.
That's why actually, I'm 44. I'm 45 in 6 weeks.
Oh, okay. Send your presents to Marcus Speer.
How about you just, get a petition together to basically get rid of Stephen Moffat?
We're going to get a change.org petition together to get you as the next doctor.
I'd watch that.
I would definitely watch a Christmas.
Spending 45 minutes every week yelling at people for doing things stupidly and walking.
Hey, I guarantee you,
you're fucking human.
Fuck it, I'm out of here, you bunch of morons.
Stephen Moffat would turn up with the script, and I'd say no, fuck off.
Yeah. Like the moment, Mark, I can see it. The BBC special. The TARDIS doors open, Marcus walks out, and then he just walks right up the stairs and walks out of the building, and he's done. They introduce the next doctor.
Somebody's excited that they haven't officially confirmed him returning next year, huh?
That's true. That is correct. Well, we'll get into that as the season goes on. Let's get some kind of closing remarks and thoughts about this episode. I'll lead off, and I'm going to say that, yeah, I was bored. Nothing about this episode was really all that exciting to me. I'm bummed that they had monsters with these really cool suits, and again, Moffat decides not to give them room to breathe and to really make them worthwhile. But we see them at the very end of the episode with their helmets removed, and they look kind of scary, but it's only for a brief flash, and I doubt they'll be back ever again.
That is another thing, though. Like, the fact that we are getting consistently cool monsters this season, one of the biggest problems I had with the last couple seasons was you would have one or two good-looking monsters, and they would be completely in episodes that completely mishandled them. And the rest of the season, you'd have, kind of mediocre monsters or whatever. But, I'm to the point, where if every single episode has a good-looking monster, it kind of doesn't matter to me how well they're used, because if they're all good looking, then that just raises the entire a rising tide raises all ships kind of thing. Like, it just raises the general quality of the show for me. From what I believe,
that's
how it feels to me.
They have some really good designers in Doctor Who at least who are doing some nice things with the shitty budget that they're handed.
It's pretty clever to keep them all under helmets until the very end.
Yeah, and it looked great when they came out and stuff.
Yeah. Coming up.
What's that?
What?
2 minute warning.
2 minute warning.
Trailer's coming up.
All right. Let's just finish up.
Yeah, but 2 minutes in American football can be anywhere from five.
Yeah, it's like a half an hour.
I'm gonna go over really quickly. Anybody else have anything to say? Because I got a couple quick comments from our peanut gallery.
Poo
it smells. Let's give our quick ratings then about the episode. So Marcus, how many zeros out of five dead
men. You're not allowed to do negative numbers, Mr. Beer. Let me just throw that out there.
Half a White Walker.
Half a White Walker. Nice. Steven, how many White Walkers do you give this episode?
I would give this episode 3 White Walkers. Like I said, I think the script itself was kind of just like a B-tier thing, but I liked that. I appreciated that it was just a self-contained little episode that then it has this weird connective tissue but the connective tissue, again, on its own, I think stood up pretty well. Like the doctor, this face, yada yada.
Sean, how many White Walkers?
Probably 3 as well. Like I said, I found it inoffensive. I wasn't as bothered by it as some of my colleagues here. I think there's some interesting stuff they threw into. I actually thought it was kind of neat to do the whole memory spark for his face versus a whole big drawn out 2-3 season wide thing that then we'd all ultimately be disappointed with anyway.
Or still waiting for the team's doctor, right?
Sometimes that's how memory works, you know. So whether or not Marcus is right about how it'll be forgotten in 2 weeks and then some girl will die, the kid be saved, the rules will be broken, whatever, I don't know. But for now, I think it's fine. And I think it's very interesting to see where they go with the whole basically mm-hmm. immortal unless some accident happens. Like, I assume that means unless she, like, gets her head chopped off or falls into lava or something, she's basically going to stay that age forever, a la Captain Jack, but without the time vortex style of stuff. So I'm curious if they're going to kind of take care of all of that in one episode next week, or if they're going to do some stuff where she could, in theory, float around the Who-niverse for a long time.
Like Jenny, who's been such a big, important part of Doctor yeah. Who, this, like, immortal, regenerative character, you know?
Yeah, I miss Jenny. I wish they could bring her back.
You do realize we're missing the Star Wars trailer.
Yeah, is it about to go on?
Calm down.
It'll be online like a minute after.
But anyway, there was some interesting stuff. I thought Capaldi did good with what he had. I didn't even realize, and this is on me for being ignorant, that the whole historical thing was wrong until I started reading about people being upset that there were electric eels there. That's really? Apparently a historical no-no with wherever they were. But anyway,
they referred to corn in this episode, which did not exist in Europe.
See, that too, the corn thing had a lot of people ruffled.
Yeah, how did they get that banned in the episode? Really bizarre.
But yeah, that was strange. Like, I didn't know Doctor Who loved new metal.
Thrash metal.
Considering it was an episode with no TARDIS and no screwdriver, I thought it was fine. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. It was just kind of there. And I'm curious to see what they're going to do with this whole immortal slash impossible slash whatever girl next week. So, the hybrid theme. I know we haven't really touched on it.
But yes, we did.
Which I think is going to be a red herring. But the whole Clara thing is still snowballing. Yeah. I mean, that's
Clara's going to become a hybrid. Like,
very
she's
interesting
Time Lord,
to see what happens human with hybrid. That. Yeah, maybe.
Like they showed Donna Noble, who was a Time Lord human hybrid, and it didn't work out, but now they show Clara in association with that. Like, they're building up to it. That's what's going to happen.
And I think it'd be interesting if, she wound up going rogue or something like that. But we can talk about this in the future. I'm also very curious to see if anybody that we've met so far winds up being this Minister of War, or if that's something we get down the road to. So, anyway, 3 out of 5. I'm done.
I'm going to give it a 1 out of 5, but I will say one thing. I've made my comments already. This is probably a very, very kid-friendly episode. I could see – my 5-year-old hasn't watched it yet, but I could see kids really enjoying this episode because it had everything that kid TV shows have.
Liquefied remains being drank by
aliens. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it's kind of mad scientist-ish, and there was a lot of comedy in this episode. This wasn't a dark episode, I think, but there was a lot of comedy in this episode. So I think this one's a little bit more kid-friendly than anything else. I'm going to give it 1 out of 5. And if I was like a 10-year-old kid or an 8-year-old kid, I'd probably give it a 5 out of 5. So here's just a few comments from our listeners. And Postmodern Dad at PPMDAD writes, he had good things to say. It says, there were high fives all around when the Viking plucked the sunglasses off the doctor's head and snapped them in two. And I laughed so hard I had to pause the show after the reversing the polarity of the neutron flow line. He also writes, I'm glad we have an explanation for the doctor's face this regeneration that sort of fits in with who he is as a character. He has got quite a few. It says, it is a sort of a shame that Maisie Williams is getting used up in two episodes back-to-back with the big reveal of who she is. Then it will get resolved next episode with no time in between to let the audience and the doctor stew about it. I think that's a recurring theme between a few of us saying that. And he finally says, would have preferred to have her be a sort of surprise guest star later in the season or at the Christmas special or something. And our good friend Annalise says, the episode was fun and heart-rending. Maybe heart-wrenching. Maisie rocked. Capaldi was bloody brilliant. Jenna was cool. Panto Odin, less so. And then finally, Savior Prodigy says, great episode, but I was disappointed in how they handled on why the doctor got his face. So there we go.
Some good feedback. I like
good feedback. Yeah. 41 seconds left on the game clock. So the Star Wars trailer will debut at 11:30, 12 o'clock. With that, that was by at Kyle Mack, who's maybe reading our thoughts. Anything else? Any final thoughts before we shut the show down here in the next 2 minutes?
No, I've got a new podcast that everybody should listen
to. Yes, Marcus. So first of all, find us at Lonely Tardis on Twitter. Go to our website, LonelyTardis.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. And Marcus, where can they find you and your new show?
Well, if you go to Twitter, it's at No Comments Cast. That's all one word. And the podcast is called No Comments Allowed. It's up on SoundCloud. So if you search for Marcus Beer on there, you'll find it. It's basically me just talking away, not necessarily ranting, just having a conversation. Imagine a radio show with just one DJ and no music. So it's incredibly dull and boring.
I'm in.
But yes, the next episode will go up on Wednesday. So yes, give us a follow, have a listen.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you. Sean, where can they find you? And you better say On the Lonely TARDIS next week.
On the Lonely TARDIS next week? And also on Twitter, at Sean Oren, S-H-A-U-N-N-O-R-T-O-N.
And Steven, where can they find you?
I don't know. I just reviewed a game called Fatal Frame, Maiden of Blackwater on ArsTechnica.com. I'm writing for Dorkly these days, which I don't think I've ever mentioned on this podcast. It's a spinoff of College Humor. Mm-hmm. Mostly focuses on geek and geek-related stuff, like Doctor Who, if you ever want to check out that stuff. I have not written about Doctor Who on there yet, but maybe I'll get around to it. You can also follow me on Twitter at Steven Strom, StevenStrom. And you can follow Ann Coulter to see her conversations with Marcus about how the United States, the citizens of the United States are settlers and not actually immigrants. And we were all just here from the very beginning, and we have no heritage in other countries. So you can go check that out. Yeah, that's there you go.
I will check that out. You can find me at Dali Dimovsky, D-A-L-I-D-I-M-O-V-S-K, blah, blah, blah. And you can we'll close this show by saying Marcus tweeted over to the rest of us that we're killing him here, and he's sick of hearing about this shite episode.
Torture.
I'm out. Jedi's are falling. Smell you later, peoples.
All right, take care, everybody.
Bye, guys. Thanks so much.
Steven, love you. Out.
See you next week.
Let's see.
All day I dream about corn.